Review of what Lynn taught on last week, and then we'll go into the question this week. We looked at how this nation, let me get to my right notes. Oh, here I am. We looked at King David reaching out to Zadok and Abiathar to help bring him back to Jerusalem. And also Lynn asked specifically if you could look into that phrase, "You are my bones and my flesh." And so as she taught last week, David desires to unite the nation. A majority of the people, as we'd read, had followed Abraham. And she spent a lot of time on, "You are my bones and my flesh," and that relationship that we have first with God and then with each other. And that definition of relationship was the quality or state of being related, having an attachment. And that certainly is what we have with each other here, as we are definitely bone of each other's bones and flesh of flesh. And she began the scriptures first about how do we get that relationship first with God, because it takes us walking in oneness with God first, which then gives us the ability to walk in oneness with one another. She went to several Old Testament scriptures that actually use those same words. We looked at it in Genesis with the creation of Adam and Eve, and that Eve was bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. We looked at that also with Laban and Jacob. We went into 2 Samuel and also into 1 Chronicles, and it was the tribes of Israel speaking to King David and letting them know how they felt about them. They also used that same phrase, "You are bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." And then we went into talking about having that relationship with Jesus, and we went into a lot of really good New Testament scriptures, starting in Matthew there about we all are all one family in God, and if we love God, we'll keep his commandments. We talked about the friendship we have with one another, and that being obedient to God maintains that relationship that we have with God. We looked into 1 John about walking in the light and having that fellowship in God one with another. Again, if we know him, we will keep his commandments. We looked at Romans, those very familiar scriptures of we are one body, members of one another. And that is such an important thing. We definitely are one body, members of one another. But yet we are individual members that we are all combined together here. We all have our own strengths and our own talents. And your desire to be as close to God is really a choice that we make as an individual. You want that close relationship with your Jesus, then you work to gain that close relationship through that prayer and that obedience. She also brought out that scripture in Ecclesiastics that I really love that says, here's the conclusion. If you want a relationship, fear God and keep his commandments. That certainly just wraps that whole thing up. That definitely is the conclusion, and that desire to have that relationship. It takes that fearing God, which we know that's not a fear as afraid to talk to him or anything like that. It's a reverential fear, that reverence that you have for God and keep his commandments. And then we went into Proverbs talking about that fear. It is the beginning of wisdom. And through that reverence of God, that desire to know God, we gain an understanding of who God is. And again, we know that fear is the beginning of wisdom, and that also leads us into a deeper understanding of God, who he is, and his word. It was a really good lesson, and she again ended with Ecclesiastes 12:13. Fear God and keep his commandments. That's the conclusion of the whole matter. Wraps it up very, very nicely. Anyone want to add anything before we jump into today's lesson? Okay, we are still in 2 Samuel, the 19th chapter. We are in verses 13 through 14. The question we're going to look at today, it says, King David deals with Amasa. How do you think this affected Joab, who bowed the hearts of all the men of Judah, and what does that mean? 2 Samuel 19, 13, and 14. And say you to Amasa, art thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. And he bowed the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the one heart of man, so that they sent this word unto the king, return thou and all thy servants. So just to kind of get a little recap of where we're at, this is still a nation very divided, as Lynn taught last week. And David is beginning that process of wanting to unite them all again. And he does this by offering forgiveness, which is so much like David. So stop and think a little bit about the emotions on both sides of this, those that supported David and those that supported Absalom. Those that are left in Jerusalem, which supported Absalom, are probably really not sure how David is going to handle this. Will he punish them? David also has to consider, as he's being restored to power, how is he going to be received, not only by Judah, but by all of Israel? So by David speaking to Zadok and Abiathar, the priest, and he tells them, you go talk to the elders of Judah first to begin this whole process of David returning to Jerusalem. And remember, David left those two priests there in Jerusalem while he went to Mahanaim. So now he needs them to act as adversaries, as you brought out last week, to help bring David back to Jerusalem and into that place of power. So David is telling the priests, who are Levites, to speak to the elders of Judah, which is David's tribe. And he's telling them, ask them first, why are you the last ones to bring me back? And really, they should have been first. Judah has always been a very powerful tribe. They would be very influential. They are definitely in a position to help with this transition, but they're holding back. Also, David tells them, tell them that I am going to put Amasa in as commander in place of Joab. That's a pretty drastic message. So I'm going to ask you this. What is King David doing with Amasa, and how do you think it's going to affect Joab? What do you think? Is there a mic runner today? Oh, Kathy. Any thoughts on that? What's he doing? I just answered your question. He's setting him up as a general. How is Joab going to deal with this? Paul?
Well, not well. I mean, by his history, you know that if you cross him, you got a problem. So that's right off the bat, that's going to be an issue there. And Amas must have had a pretty good rapport with all the people, because it was not only was he bone of his bone, flesh of his flesh, he must have had a good rapport, and he knew that politically speaking, he could unite the people more than Joab.
Think what he's doing here. He's taking the commander of the enemy army that just fought against David, and he's putting him in control. That's a big step. If you read that last line of verse 11, it says, seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house. So the feelings of all the people, and those feelings really would have been like all across the board, right? People for not really caring who was king, whether it was David or Absalom, just being glad this whole thing was over. Others would have felt fear, especially if they supported Absalom. And probably some even felt anger at the fact that David was now going to come back into power. Often they would have had fear for their own selves. David had certainly a right to punish anybody. He had a right to punish them. And so those, especially the men who supported Absalom and fought against David and his supporter. So they don't, you know, think of what they feel. So all that is coming to David. David hears all that. It says all the speech, everything everybody was talking about, all that chatter, that fear, that unsurety, that anger. So David has to do something that is going to begin this process of reuniting this people. And so when we read verse 13, and say to Amasa, art thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually, which is permanently, in the room of Joab. So this is a really drastic move for David to do. David is a very, very intelligent man. We know he's very fair, but we also know he's very strategic. He was that warrior king. Lynn?
I definitely see this as a political move on David's part. But then I also wonder, I mean, he knew Joab and what Joab was capable of, and Joab already proved that he wasn't going to ever give up his position. And to me, he signed Amasa's death warrant.
Yeah.
You know, because, oh, I'm going to put you in charge of Joab. Now, does he really think Joab's not going to do anything about
right.
it? Oh.
Right, right. Back there to Paul.
Yeah, I agree with Lynn. First of all, Amasa was set in by, I can't remember his name, but I think that was also a political hire type thing. You know, they're relatives, mm-hmm. and that's the best he had put in charge of the army.
Mm-hmm.
And he proved that he's not worth much because most of his guys lost it in the wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't much of a battle there. He mm-hmm. wasn't a leader.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even show up, mm-hmm. as we're going to read
right.
later. He didn't show up until the glory time, mm-hmm. and then he shows up. And
mm-hmm.
so we already knew that there was going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that David either already talked to Joab or he just knew that how things were going to go out, mm-hmm. and this was a total mm-hmm. political move.
Mm-hmm. He must have felt in some way he was going to be able to handle Joab in this. Joab is a very valuable man, and especially in wartime. And David wanted and needed it on his side, even though Joab was difficult for David to handle. Remember, Joab, we've looked at him really closely. Joab really has very little respect for David. And he's just, you know, he's a difficult man to deal with, but he was very needful. So this is very much, it's a smart political move. And I thought the same thing. I thought, is it really possible that King David thought, if I put this man in charge, because it says I'm going to put him as captain of the host, continually, this word, original word, is permanently, instead, where it says in the room of Joab, instead of Joab, he's moving Joab out. Now, Joab is still valuable. He's going to keep him somewhere in there because he couldn't do that. Of course, we'll see in the future what happens. Anyway, I thought maybe David thought, this is a way I can get rid of the leader of those who rose against me. Whether he thought that far, I don't know. But to like Amasa and the people that supported, what a real sign of forgiveness. I'm going to take the leader of the army who came directly against me, and I'm going to reward him. I'm going to forgive him. So David is extending a huge political olive branch here that I think is pretty multifaceted. I think it's pretty multifaceted there. So whatever David's reasonings were, maybe all of the above, it was a smart move. It was a smart, smart move because it is offering forgiveness. If you forgive the leader who came against you, you're going to forgive all those underneath him who came against you. It's definitely a political olive branch. So I want to go over to 2 Samuel, the 17th chapter, verse 25, just to read who this Amasa is. 2 Samuel 17, down to verse 25. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister to Zariah, Joab's mother. This is another nephew of David's, and it's a cousin, right? Am I following that right? A cousin of Joab when they get doing this and that. So again, here is David dealing first with the natural bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, direct family member he's going to deal with here, as well as one of God's people. So let's go over 2 Samuel, the 15th chapter. And I want to read verses 4 through 6 first. In 2 Samuel 15, 4 through 6. Absalom said, "Moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man with hash any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeyance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel." He gained a great following. Drop down to verses 10 through 12. "But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron.' And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gileonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom." He gained a great following of this nation of Israel. So by David placing him now as the army over the whole nation, again, like I said before, that was a huge olive branch. That is a huge way of turning the people back to him, because he's kind of given a green card for the behavior. He's given a pass for that. So it's a very smart move. It's very political. It's a very humble move for David to do. But I also tried to think about, how did the people on the receiving end feel of that? How did this Amasa feel? Was he a little nervous trying to step into the place of Joab? Did he feel humbled? Did he regret his choices that he made? You know, so this thing that David is doing is definitely a two-sided coin. It's going to cause a lot of reaction in the people, and I think David hoped it would get people to stop and think about what they had done, that they really were wrong in being caught up in this conspiracy and following Absalom, and then to be offered that forgiveness right up front would have to be a pretty humbling thing for those people to feel, and a pretty grateful thing. So as we look at that, that kind of begins to answer this question that says, who bowed the hearts of the men of Judah? Who bowed their hearts of the men, and what does that mean? Who bowed them? Who bowed the hearts? Any thoughts on that one? Dennis?
That was David, and that was with all the work he had done to get everybody back together and to support him.
Amen. It definitely was David, and it says he bowed the hearts of the men of Judah. He really humbled them. He made them feel grateful and thankful, and because he is just offering that forgiveness, and that forgiveness is the first step in uniting these men of Judah and then this nation of Israel. And again, as I've talked before, it had to be an opportunity for them to look at themselves, their own behavior, their own choices. And so they realized those that supported Absalom had to come to some recognition that they were wrong in this. David could have required their lives. David could have had Amasa killed. He was the leader. He could have done that. But David also realized no good was going to come from punishment. Enough death. Enough. It was enough. No good was going to come for that. This was now a time to heal. And David begins that process by forgiveness. I want to read just briefly in Ecclesiastes, the 3rd chapter, and just verse 1. not what I wanted to do. No, I want to read verse 3. I want to read Ecclesiastes 3, 3. A time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up. And that is definitely what David is doing. He is, by humbling himself, offering that forgiveness, which is going to be a very humbling thing for these men to receive because of how they had fought against them. He's really offering Amasa a fresh start, a clean start. Amasa will now be answerable, obviously, to King David. King David is answerable to God. Amasa will also be accountable to God to how he conducts himself in this position. You don't just get a position with no responsibility or no work that comes with it. It comes with it. And God has an expectation of anybody he puts into any position. And he has, and if David's going to offer this to Amasa, there's some responsibility that is going to come with it. But this is a wonderful thing. Again, David is offering that forgiveness. Forgiveness begins by acknowledging our own faults and then having a desire to change. And that is definitely what King David is doing here. This is a move that is good for the whole nation. The good of the many outweigh the good of the few, especially with Joab here. More importantly, this is the right decision in God. This is the right decision to do in God. So, but I thought a lot about Joab and how he was going to handle any of this. And we've already kind of talked about it. You know, Joab is always going to be Joab. And he is not interested in the good of the many. He's only interested in himself, which is really, really sad. But this whole situation has offered an opportunity for so many people to change, to get back on the right path. The men that followed Absalom and the mistakes that were made, this offers an opportunity to change. But that's an individual choice. That opportunity comes to all men of Israel. And so as we've talked before, change is really difficult. God cannot change us or our behavior if we are not willing to change. God cannot change us if we are unwilling to change. We have to have a desire to make that change, which means we have to look at ourselves, see our mistakes, our wrongs, whatever it is, and then we have to make a conscious decision in humility and repent and change. But God allows those situations in our lives that give us an opportunity to change if we will. Joab had an opportunity here. Joab had a perfect opportunity. He could either get on board with King David and try to help him unite the people, or he can continue to do his own thing, which is what he does. I always remember Alice teaching that teaching one time on roadblocks. Remember that teaching, roadblocks? Where she taught that there are so many things and situations that come into our lives that God allows. And it puts us, whatever that roadblock will be, it puts us in a position of having to make a choice. She was always good about two choices. It's either going to bring you closer to God or it's going to take you further away from God. And you make that choice. Joab is right there at this point. So if we choose the path that we want to be closer to God, it takes work on our old nature. It isn't easy. Okay, I'm going to go follow God. Now it's all easy. It's a bed of roses. I got no problems. It doesn't work that way. Choosing to make that path that brings us closer to God forces us to recognize our own nature and the need to make changes. It's not the easiest path to travel, but it is definitely the one on which we will grow into what God desires us to be. Joab is right there again, as he has been in the past. He has a huge choice to make here. He has not only the ability to deal with this new situation. Jacob's a smart man. He can handle this. He can deal with what David is doing here if he chooses. Joab has a responsibility to David, and he has a responsibility to the people. He's a leader. He's in a position of authority. But more importantly, he has a responsibility to God and how he'll choose to handle with this. And Joab, instead of realizing that he is who he is because of God, not anything within himself, Joab often took advantage of his position of power, and we watched him pretty much do whatever he wants. He is self-centered. He is a very self-centered. Yet Joab was bone of David's bones, flesh of his flesh. He was directly related to David. He was naturally related, and he was spiritual related. Yet we see that Joab never really had a respect for God, and he didn't really have a respect for the position he held, and he didn't really have a respect for God's people or God. He really didn't. But here he is. He's at an opportunity right now where he can change. He could learn, and he could grow, and he could become better in God. But he doesn't choose that, because the first thing it's going to take is humility. And when you talk about Joab, humility doesn't even come into mind, right? Joab is a long way from having humble. But remember that humility is the ability for us to see ourselves the way God sees us. And then we readjust ourselves to fit God's vision of who we are. That's what humility is. The ability to see ourselves the way God sees us, that vision he has of us. And then we take that old nature and we work on it and we work on it and we readjust it, that we fulfill that vision that God sees in this. So this is such a difficult situation for David. This is such a difficult situation for David, as we've talked about. And these problems began in his own family. His own son was the cause of all of this death. What, 20,000 men were lost. His own son was the cause of this division. His own son. Truly bone of David's bones, flesh of David's flesh. It's very, very difficult. But it is really good to see David kind of coming back into that role as king and leader and beginning to make the decisions that will benefit God's people, to do what's right in the eyes of God. And he's probably operating with a great hole in his heart. This has been a very difficult thing. I want to read Psalms, the 55th chapter, for a minute. Does anybody have any thoughts or anything before we, comments before we go into Psalms? Paul, do you have a thought?
Yeah, something you said there about changing. I mean, the way we were created, we're always going to be changing. So, you know, you make a few changes and you think you're in pretty good shape, and then, you know, that's when you fall.
Right.
So if we can just keep it in our minds that we have to always work on ourselves and we're always going to be changing, I think it'd be a lot easier for us.
Yes, I do too. There was somebody one time years and years ago who had said they were going through a particularly difficult time. And they had gone through some difficult times in their saints and in their life. And they said, you know, when I make it through this one, I'll be pretty close to perfect. And the sad part is, they really thought that. It was one of those things like, okay, what do I say to that one? No, I don't think so. But it's like Paul said, it doesn't matter how old we're going to get. We are always going to be changing because we're human. Life is going to change around us, and life is going to affect us, and we're going to deal with new challenges and new things. And it's always that ability for us to change, and that's a wonderful thing that God offers to us. And I think it's an important thing to keep in mind. But isn't that part of being humble, recognizing that we haven't got there yet? The scripture says we're striving for that. We're working towards it. We're not going to gain it in this life. We're not gaining perfection in this life. Don't expect it of yourself and don't expect it of each other. We're always going to make mistakes. And you know, it's like this whole situation with David here. Here, this whole situation has affected so many people. But isn't it up to the individuals of that whole group to begin to make the changes? It's an individual choice. And I'm sure there's some that go on that were stayed angry about this or stayed in fear about this or maybe didn't care about it. But it is up to every individual to decide if you want to walk in unity with God. If you walk in unity with God, you walk in unity with his people. But that's an individual choice that each one of us makes. So I want to read in Psalms, the 55th chapter, and I want to start in verse 12. And I really like all the Psalms. But anyway, this is David talking about a particular time of his life that was very difficult for him. And what he begins to talk about is that this problem and everything occurred within his own family. And it was even more hurtful to him because of that. So Psalms 55, verse 12. For it was not an enemy that reproached me. Then I could have borne it. One of your common, normal enemies. Neither was it he that hated me that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him. If this had been a common enemy, somebody that had come against him in the past, he could have hid from him. He could have done some things. He could have controlled it a little bit. It would have been an outside enemy. But it was thou, a man mine equal, my guide, which is companion, and mine acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together, and we walked onto the house of God in company. Now, I don't think this is Joab that David is referring to, and most commentaries, if you read it, feel it's Ahithophel, who was his counselor that sided with Absalom. But he's dealing again with those same feelings of dealing directly with a family member, first a natural family member, but also a spiritual family member. Bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. And it hurt. It hurt. Verse 15, let death seize upon them and let them go down quick into hell. For wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. That is really strong. That is really strong. 16, as for me, I will call upon God and the Lord shall save me. David knew the only person he could control or change was himself. David knew that. Even these that came against him, David knew he could only control himself. He only knew that. And the way he's going to deal with it is with prayer. He's going to deal with it in prayer. 17, evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. He hath delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me, for there were many with me. God shall hear and afflict them, even he that abideth of old, Selah, because they have no changes. Therefore, they fear not God. Look really closely at verse 19. God shall hear. Who does he hear? David's prayer. And it says, God will afflict them. Who's he going to afflict? His enemies. How is he going to afflict? Roadblocks. Roadblocks. Even he that abideth of old, the Almighty God. But listen really carefully to that last sentence in verse 19. Because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. Isn't that exactly where Joab is right now? Isn't he facing a great big roadblock in his life? But isn't that roadblock offering him an opportunity to change? It's giving him a change. He can go closer to God or further away. But if you love yourself more than you love God, you won't make those changes. You won't make those changes. If you love self more than you love God, you will not make those changes. And that's exactly where Joab finds himself now. And Joab is bone of David's bones, flesh of his flesh. He's a direct family member, but he's also a member of that family of God. It's a double thing that's happening here. And it makes it very difficult for David to deal with it. It makes it very, very difficult. But again, Joab, he's facing a big roadblock. He really is. He could change it. He has an opportunity to change the way he's been this entire life. I can't imagine what Joab feels like at the end of the day. He's not a kind man. He's not a nice man. Here is an opportunity. It's free. It's given. No strings. You make a choice, Joab. You do it. But we know that Joab loves Joab more than he loves God because he doesn't change. He does not change. So, and I think even that has to be a difficult thing also for David. I think that has to be a difficult thing. So those are everything that I had today. Any thoughts or comments today before we close? Any thoughts or comments? Okay. Come tonight ready to just sit down. No, stand up. And worship God and enjoy our time. You know, it is such a nice time to be able to come into this building and set aside the stress of the week and the coming week and all that kind of stuff. Just love God and worship him and thank him for what he has done for us.